Kolek a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Jim Bellett, number 61.
I get it.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor!
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Good morning, North Alabama. Welcome in, Cube Show. Glad you're with us. Tuesday edition of Cube Show. Still a lot to get to. I'm not even sure we covered everything yesterday from over the weekend.
Oh, I know for a fact we didn't. First of all, we didn't get to Troy and their win.
Picked up a conference championship.
Yep, and put the brick in the wall. They're building a wall down there, too. It's one of their slogans.
I thought you were talking about, like, the new facility that they're building right there behind the behind the field. Maybe that you were thinking that's a wall. Or
is it weird that I miss it being Movie Gallery Stadium?
You should.
Movie Gallery logo on the field. Like, I miss that.
They tried. Movie Gallery tried to make that happen, and it just couldn't last. So. Yeah, we'll get to we'll talk some NFL today. Monday Night Football last night.
Congratulations to your Steelers and to Ryan Shazier for being able to move his body parts.
Yeah, it's a plus. That was one of the scarier hits I've seen in a long time, and I think it was more Shazier's reaction of, you know, a lot of people talked about him not being able to move his legs immediately, but the way he reached around and grabbed, like, almost looked like a specific part of his back, and then wasn't moving his legs and had to be carted off. Just a scary scene last night. You don't get a ton of those where you just kind of sit back and say, man, that's, I don't like this.
No, that game last night was insane. As far as just the physicality of it, some of the chippiness, some of the unsportsmanlike. Actually, a lot of the 11 penalties that were 15-yarders last night between these two. 11 15-yard penalties between these two. Cole, 11!
That's a lot. But you know
these
two teams don't like each other.
That's 165 yards of penalty yardage. Just on one type of penalty.
Yeah.
The Bengals had 173 penalty yards last night.
It's like a good rushing night. Just in penalty yards.
13 for 173. They broke a franchise record, which, by the way, that's Bengals doing it. That's pretty impressive.
It's true.
It's a Bengals record. There's Devontae Perfect getting lit up by Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah.
I got audio coming up in the next segment about Juju Smith-Schuster. Not exactly apologetic after the game about it.
Kind of reminded me of Hines Ward a little bit.
A little taunting afterwards, too.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you mentioned that hit. It's, you know, you just see sort of Shazier go after Malone, and he just sort of, Ryan ducks his head at the last moment. And, yeah, that moment where it's just, it's really scary. Because you don't know what's happening, and all it, you could tell he was concerned quick. He reaches back towards that back. He rolls over. He starts pumping his hand on his right hand, just, I guess, checking feeling. Maybe he's losing some of the feeling. He rips his chin straps off. It is it's scary. I've never been a party to something like that on a football field in my lifetime. I don't know if you have, but. To watch that and to know that wasn't one of these, like, light him up targeting hits. You know, Shazier was just trying to make a play and he just ducked his head.
Yeah, he just had his head down a little bit and I think caught him in a very weird way. I know after the game, Tomlin and Kevin Colbert, the general manager of the Steelers, both went to the hospital to visit Shazier.
Yeah, they got a police escort right there. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers haven't given anything official about him being able to move. Everyone's being really precautious or really cautious about this and taking all the proper precautions with it, and rightfully so. But Vince Williams of the Steelers told, I think it's Dexter Fowler yesterday.
Jeremy Fowler
of ESPN. That Shazier said as he was being carted off, he could feel his extremities, which is obviously very good news.
Yeah.
They were reporting a spinal contusion at the time because when he rolled over, his legs didn't move. You didn't see him move his legs.
No, not at all.
And that's the first thing you thought of, which is, oh no, this is not good.
A statement from Steelers general manager and vice president Kevin Colbert last night. Ryan Shazier suffered a back injury, was taken to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center where he had a CT scan and an MRI to evaluate the condition of his back. Ryan's injury will not require surgery at this time as he continues to improve. We'll stay overnight to continue evaluations with the hopes of returning to Pittsburgh on Tuesday. We'll provide further updates at the appropriate time. So it feels like this is nowhere near as bad as it could have been, which is sort of stating the obvious. But at the same time, just glad to hear that it's not even half as bad as maybe it could have been. So,
yeah, and have you been a part of anything like that?
Not like that, no. I mean, obviously, you've heard the story about Ben Leard getting knocked out, and I've been around multiple guys getting knocked out, but I've never had any kind of neck or spine injury on the field while I was playing. Not even really for an opposing player. And, I mean, any injury you hate to see and you hate to sort of be around. But I was pretty fortunate. That was never something we had to deal with. I don't even think we had anything like that in practice while I was there.
What was it like trying to get back to playing after the Ben injury? Because I know that obviously they had to go back on the field defensively. I mean, that's when Cincinnati went up 17-0 on them.
You know, it's really weird how I'm not really proud to say this. It's really weird how quickly, at that age, with that mindset, you move on. If you let that stay in your brain and stay on the front end of your thought process, it's going to happen to somebody else, especially playing the position that we played. You're going to get somebody else killed. So it's amazing when you're young and you're dumb and you're arrogant and you're cocky and a lot of testosterone's flowing that you just kind of get in there and go the next play.
But isn't that also kind of self-preservation?
Probably,
because,
yeah.
If you're out of it, let's say the next play, like your head's kind of in the sky or something, in the clouds, just in a daze, that next play you're gonna get run over, and then you're gonna be back awake playing, because if not you're gonna get hurt, or you're just gonna get run over, you're gonna get taken out of the game, or like you said, you're gonna get the next guy hurt, because someone's gonna get past you. So, I mean, I guess I can understand from your position where you're from that the next play or two, you know, the other team's not stopping running after you.
Yeah,
you know, and for Cincinnati, I mean, it wasn't one of their players, so they're still trying to score. Because Andy Dalton can't seem to beat Pittsburgh for whatever reason, so they're trying to go up 17-0 and they're trying to win this game, you know. And obviously, if you've seen from the score this morning, it didn't work out for them. Steelers get a field goal late and they come back to score 13 in the final quarter to win 23-20. But I think I understand more so from a position like yours that gets hit immediately. Like, if it's a receiver, you know, maybe. A running back, maybe. But if you're on the offensive line, someone's coming after your head the next play anyway.
It's true. You, I mean, it's a CYA at that point.
It's probably a little different if, like, maybe if you're, like, an edge rusher. Or maybe if you're, like, a defensive lineman. Maybe you took it easy the next play. Or you let off just a little bit, especially if it happened on your team. Then you're seeing how effective you're not being. But for Cole Kubelik, a center, it's head on a swivel.
Yeah,
you're going to get it knocked off.
They're going to make you look bad, and you're going to get embarrassed, and potentially you or someone else is going to get hurt. If that stays on your mind and that is a part of your mind moving forward, you just can't let it happen.
How long was Ben out for after that game?
I think he missed the next game.
Just one more game after that?
Yeah. Because I think that was late in the year. So I think we had a non-conference game, and then I think he came back for the Georgia game. I don't think he missed – he may have missed 2 weeks after that. But I can't remember exactly. And back then it was – you know, we kind of make fun of it sometimes, but our guys did a pretty good job with that too. All right, so – well, he mentioned that Central Florida game last night. Did he say he played in that game? Because that was the next week. Surely he didn't play in that game. I know he played at Georgia because that's where he set school records. I'm wondering if we got through the Central Florida game without him. I think he played in that game.
I can look up the box score while we're doing tweets.
Yeah. Let's get the 10 after tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweet!
You can tweet in at Cube Show, 6 to 10 a.m. weekday mornings right here on Sports. At Cole Kublik, at Arky Shea. Follow us there. Maddie Gore tweets in, at Cole Kublik, do you see Alabama potentially winning the national championship, especially with the defense getting healthier? I'd say there's a 1-in-4 shot.
I think I'd say the
25% chance.
I think it's about that.
I think that's wrong. It's not right. Is it a 1-in-4 shot when you know you only have a chance of playing two of the teams still? You see what I'm saying? It's not.
Well, yeah, because you still got to
get. You have as good a shot as the other three teams?
Wouldn't it be 1-in-3? Because you have to only have to get through two of the teams.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. That maybe I'm a little bit off there. So
is that 99?
Yes, 1999.
Jeff Klein.
Yeah. So they set him out.
Jeff Klein passed to Tavares Roberts, a 20-yard touchdown. There we go. That's how you start.
look at the last touchdown to Carson Bailey. How much time was left in the game?
I'll get that one for you.
Alex Lincoln, interception for touchdown. That was a big play.
It's 2:04 left.
I know we hit Carson Bailey on a long touchdown, I thought, at the end of that game.
Got Heath Evans with an 8-yard touchdown run with 2:58 to go.
No. Pretty sure Carson Bailey scored.
Oh, yeah.
I
kind of forgot. 21 points had to be scored in the fourth to 10-7 in the fourth.
It was an ugly game. Get off me. Our quarterback was hurt.
I'm not mad. It's over.
Win's a win.
It is. It is, Cole. A win's a win.
Jeez. Getting after me earlier in the morning here.
I just wanted to finish off that thought.
At Craig Marsh tweets, curious your reasoning on this. I don't want to think Bama's opponents are purposely being aided. He quotes Ben Jones. Ben Jones writes for Tide Sports and the Tuscaloosa News. He does a lot of Bama statistics.
I'm glad we're opening the show with a lot of Bama this morning. He tweets, only fair.
Alabama's opponents are penalized an average of 30.1 yards per game this year, fewest in the nation. Alabama was last in that category last year, too, 31.4 yards per game. Alabama has ranked 89th or lower in this category every year dating back to 2009.
So it's true. Alabama opponents are penalized fewer times when they play Alabama than against anybody else. Well, that's at least tells us that teams are trying to play perfect ball against them. Do you think there's truth to that? To the idea that Alabama is, let's say, really so good that officials don't call as many penalties? Now, there's probably more penalties called in the close games than there are in the 35-10 games. Because at that point, we all want to go home, right?
Pretty much.
I mean, we don't need to throw all the penalties when it's 56-3.
Yeah, if it's 34-0, you're probably not throwing a bunch of flags.
Yeah, there's probably no need to.
Dr. Saturday, at Yahoo Dr. Saturday tweets, Arkansas confirms it has hired Houston's Hunter Yurecek as its new athletic director. Juracek brought Tom Herman to Houston.
Yeah, I'm just I'm not gonna say I know a lot about him. I'm just gonna say congratulations. One step down, one to go. Do you think Arkansas?
Wonder if he's maybe tired of dealing with Tillman Fertitta, the rogue booster that is said to be in charge at Houston.
Well, man, money talks. Of course,
but that school in particular has more of a one man show behind the scenes, I think. So if you're not getting along with that guy, you could see where things would get a little sideways.
Fair, but it is an upgrade in jobs.
Yes,
yeah, to go from Houston to Arkansas. I'm curious also though about that. Do you think that the boosters and the board wants somebody who's less Jeff Longish, like someone who's more willing to just
do what they say,
be guided?
Jeff Long did one thing wrong as the Arkansas athletic director. He got sideways with some big money folks and sort of pushed them away. And you see where it got him.
Yeah.
I think he did good things for the athletic department, for the schools. I think he brought good recognition to the university. But you get sideways with some guys. You know, and I think sometimes we forget the simplicity involved here. It doesn't always have to be so-and-so wants this, or Booster A says to do this. It can be as easy as Booster B says, oh, I'm not allowed to be a part of that decision anymore? Don't cut that check next month. Then all of a sudden, Razorback Foundation calls the athletic department and said, Booster B's check didn't show up this month.
What? That's a big one. I don't understand why we didn't get that one.
Oh, yeah. He said, I'm not allowed at practice anymore. Can't call plays. So, I'm done. All it takes is one guy to say, cool, I won't be donating anymore.
Yeah, just...
Why not? I don't like the athletic director.
And all it has to do is someone get their feelings hurt, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we know that the kind of egos you're dealing with most of those guys, that's probably not hard to do. No, you're not calling our fourth and goal play this week. Sorry.
What? Betty, cancel the check.
No, you're not deciding who starts a quarterback. I'm sorry. That was part of the deal.
Cancel November's payment, too. This is easy. Just put some more dollars in my pocket.
How weird is this? Brian Fisher, at Brian D. Fisher, tweets, so ASU appears to indeed be keeping all the assistant coaches and is paying $12 million just to replace Todd Graham with Herm Edwards.
I got to tell you, this Herm Edwards thing, if it actually works, we're talking about groundbreaking thoughts here. They're paying $12 million to bring a new coach in, get rid of the old coach, and keep all the assistants.
No. None of you guys are why we're not winning a bunch of games. It's just that guy. Everybody else is killing it.
The guy with the Britney Spears mic? Not the one that we wanted.
No. Everybody else is good. We got to get rid of him. And we think we can go from that 7 to 11 win plateau. Who are you bringing in? Oh, the guy from TV.
Either Herm Edwards has figured this out. And to say, you guys are overthinking this college football assistants and coaching thing. Or he's lazy. And I know he wakes up early in the morning, he works out, and he drinks his Gatorades and whatever he does, and he's excited for the day. But it feels lazy not to go get your own coaches, right?
A little bit.
Unless you're just like, I don't want to deal with this.
No, we're gonna hear from Herm Edwards a little later in the show.
Herm is insane. There's no way this works out. Cole, I'm telling you now.
I don't see how it can.
It can't. There's this guy's crazy. Or maybe he's crazy like a fox.
Well,
can you imagine if he's the one to figure this all out? He does the general manager aspect He's like, let's keep these coaches. We can figure it out amongst ourselves.
Hey, I'm interested if you saw this exchange.
I'm the general manager of the Arizona State Sun Devils.
I like that title. It works. Danny Cannell tweeted, so your 2017 made-for-TV ratings invitational will be Clemson versus Bama, Oklahoma versus Georgia. To which Kirk Herbstreit quotes that tweet and adds, dude, what has happened to you? Double question mark. Seriously, you're a good guy. And I get the whole, quote, anti-SEC guy you've created. But you think ESPN wouldn't love to have Ohio State in this? They're a ratings bonanza, all caps. Come on, dude. You're better than that.
You know, there's a reason that you and I don't really discuss what people like Danny Cannell and Joey Galloway say. It's because a lot of what they're doing is just trying to be, let's scream hot takes. It's the reason we don't react.
You see that, I'll tell you this. Because Tom brought it up again yesterday on his show. And you know I try not to bash other TV people. I think Matt Leinart believed himself Saturday afternoon when he said Fresno State is Alabama's best win.
And look at the wins.
And I don't know what to do with that. Maybe I should have mentioned him on Twitter when I said something about it.
Oh yeah, you should add him. Add him on Twitter just to get his attention. The Skip Baylesses, the Stephen A. Smiths, the Colin Cowherds, the Danny Cannells, the Joey Galloways.
Here's the thing, there's no way to mention someone on Twitter like that you don't know and not come across as a blatant attack. Like, there's no way for what Kirk did to come across in a real positive. People think he's just going at Danny when he could just be saying, man, come on, think about this. Like, it's not real.
As opposed to say, like, you're probably a good dude. It's like, I don't know if that's true or not. I'm sure he's fine. It doesn't matter.
I mean, if I tweet, yo, at Matt Leinart, CFB or whatever it is, you can't tell me you really believe Fresno State's Bama's best win.
It's the same reason we don't get on here and read Kevin Skarbinski articles. They're here just to get you to be mad. We're intelligent sports talk with some rap every now and then. That's what we do. It's just all they do is we make our own opinions on this show. Look, we said what was the other argument, which is we were having last week, brands, like they want to have brand names into the playoff. Everybody in the top 10 was a brand name. Oh, Ohio, it's clearly not a made. We don't have to dignify that. It's clearly not made for TV.
No.
Ohio State and Alabama are both going to bring ratings.
Trophy Nuts tweets, I enjoy hearing at Cole Kubrick stories from his playing days. We like stayed on the field after that Central Florida game, went around and like high-fived the students.
We're staying around?
Yeah. We had our backup quarterback. Let's see. At that point in time, we were probably like 3-6 or something. We could still get to a bowl that year, so we would have needed Bama, Georgia. Maybe we were 4. Maybe we were like 4-5 at that point.
4-5, I think, after that game.
4-5 after that game. So, yeah, we were 3-5 going in. We weren't great. There weren't many people there. I've got a picture at home.
Versus 3-6 Central Florida.
I got a picture at home. I'll tweet it out. I'll go find it later because I remember seeing it. Where I'm like, somebody took a picture of me like high-fiving the students after that game because there was like 10,000 people there left. We're just appreciative that they stayed to see us get a win. So, hey, Dante Culpepper. That's a decent team. I mean, he alone in college was a decent team. I don't care what team he was playing for. Like, he made you a decent team. Imagine if we'd had him. Sorry, Ben, but I'm just saying.
Vic Penn led Central Florida.
I can't tell you who Vic Penn is.
Well, he led them in passing, the 29 of 52 for 374.
Their D-line was so bad. Their defense, they ran the same defense every play. And I remember, this is so weird. They had this safety blitz that they ran. And they cheated it every time they ran it. So they would widen a linebacker out where he was never lined up any other time, no matter what the formation was. And then he lined up like 5 yards closer to the line of scrimmage. So we're going over it in film all week. And I'm thinking, this is one of those deals that you practice and you watch on film. You're like, they're never going to run this. They're never going to run this. They're never going to. Then you see it and you're like, oh, here it comes. And I remember I called it out. And you could kind of see them like, what? It's like, I was like, safety blitz, safety blitz, safety blitz. And Ben changes the protection. It's like, we pick it up like that. And I was thinking, or no, I guess it was Jeff Klein. But I'm like, you guys really thought that was going to work?
They're like, hey, who told him?
You got to make it look a little different. I mean, they were like a base 4-3 team that never moved. Like, I mean, three technique to the strong side, shade nose on the backside, two wide defensive ends, played their linebacker straight up. Then never did anything. They did like a double linebacker twist blitz in both A gaps, which wasn't that difficult to pick up if you knew it was coming, which we did. I felt bad for them, man. Because, they weren't very talented, but it's like, your scheme's awful. We probably shouldn't go look up who the DC was that year, because it's probably like some good quality SEC defensive coordinator now, and I'm trashing him.
They led you 10-7 after 30.
Well, there's Jeff Klein.
Hey, come on.
There's a good chance Jeff Klein, Jeff Klein had a lot of fun in college. He enjoyed his college years.
Good.
More than I did, which is saying a lot. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Listen online, umpsports.com. Every morning we like to let you know how sports sounded the night before. It's the Cube Show Early Morning Audible.
Time for the Cube Show Early Morning Audible.
Chubb's going to town! Touchdown, I think, yeah! Chubby time, baby!
Grab on, get out the right bread and mustard! It is grand salami time!
He's at the 50, the 40, the 35!
Yes!
He will score!
Yeah, yeah! He's got a touchdown! Kansas City!
By the way, Cole was thinking about the 1998 game with Dante Culpepper.
Yeah,
and all. That was a very close game. Well, it's just that was Gabe Gross in it, quarterback, who was 11 of 30 in that game.
Like you said, Gross.
That's why he became a baseball player. One of the reasons why. Last night, the Steelers and Bengals at Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati were in a bit of a cluster.
Has a guy ever made a better sports athletic career decision than that?
Antonio Gates made a pretty good one.
Yeah.
To go from basketball to football. That one
instead of playing like European in basketball.
In the G League.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the Pittsburgh Steelers go into Paul Brown Stadium and pull off a victory 23-20 thanks to, for some reason, we're going to hear from him for the second time in as many weeks, Chris Boswell.
Boswell is ready. The snap, the ball, put down. The kick is up, arching through, and good! The Steelers have won it on a 38-yard game-winning field goal by Chris Boswell.
Back-to-back weeks of Boswell is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Not the like GOAT like Vontaze Burfict gets to be, where he's just a jerk. He's actually just the GOAT to be able to win that game. So a win for Pittsburgh is huge because, what do you had, 8-9 straight wins now?
Yeah.
9 straight wins for the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is a record for this year so far. No one has won more than 9 in a row this season in Pittsburgh, and it's been crazy. What was crazy last night, as we mentioned, the scary moment with Ryan Shazier, as the Cincinnati Bengals are going in to try to score to go up to 17-2. Nothing in that game. Ryan Shazier puts his head down, his hit on the head. He loses feeling in his lower extremities for a few moments. Looks a lot worse than what it ended up being. A lot of people feared the very worst, which of course is paralysis. He grabbed for the bottom of, or the middle of his back, rolled over, did not move his legs. He immediately took off the chin straps of his helmet. And then the craziness happened as far as the somberness. And everyone just sort of stood mouth agape watching that. But Vince Williams, plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers, said that when he was rolling off, even though he gave no thumbs up, he said he did have feeling in all of his extremities. Now, the Steelers did not confirm any of that, as Cole reported earlier, that the Steelers said that he did get the medical attention, the MRI that he deserves at the University of Cincinnati Hospital last night. He is going to be under more treatment and more observation, of course. Mike Tomlin, in fact, got a police escort to go straight to the game, or straight from the game to the hospital last night after speaking to the reporters. And Mike Tomlin, who talked about Shazier.
Thankfully, the guys stayed on task, man, and were able to do the things necessary largely over the second half to march back and for that to be given credit. But make no mistake, man, this is a tough game, tough business, man. 5-0 is our brother. Thoughts and prayers out to him. I don't have any update in terms of his status. Obviously, he's receiving quality medical care.
Having that over at the University of Cincinnati Hospital. But bigger news out of all that, Cincinnati blows a 17-point lead in that game. Had a chance to be right in the muck with 6-6 as far as looking at a wild card spot. Instead, they're now 5-7 and a bunch of, not good. It's not good. How about I just put it simply that way? Also,
Mike Tomlin just feels like one of these dudes' teammates. Like
5-0 is our guy. 5-0 is our guy.
Seems like a coach sometimes.
But you love Mike Tomlin.
He's great.
Like he's a guy I would love to play for.
Absolutely.
Let's also mention that Juju Smith-Schuster went after Vontaze Burfict, and what some people called a dirty play. It was a very aggressive hit. It was one that was shattering. The helmet did hit the other helmet. He taunted Vontaze Burfict. Little aggressive. These two teams apparently not big fans of each other, according to the 20 total penalties in this game.
That's a lot.
11 personal fouls combined.
Feels like a lot.
And the Cincinnati Bengals set a franchise record, which is saying something, for penalty yardage, 13 penalties, 173 yards.
Whoa. Yeah, it is a lot.
Let's put that in perspective. That's almost double what the Steelers had rushing last night.
That's silly.
In penalty yards. And you wonder why Cincinnati can't quite get over the hump. But Juju Smith-Schuster, after that game, was talking about his hit, and shockingly, not really apologetic.
After I seen the replay, I think I should have held back a little bit more, and just, you know, from blocking him.
Oh, yeah, sure, I got straight cash on
it. I also believe that that's not me. You know,
it's
I should never stood
karma.
On him. I apologize for that. And
it's called
with that,
karma.
With that being said,
it's called
I hope
karma.
He gets better.
I couldn't ever figure out who was talking in the background.
I don't know who it is.
Oh. But I don't know if you could tell, but what they're talking about in the background is...
It's called
I hope
karma.
He gets better.
I think it's karma.
Called karma. Anyway, Mike Tomlin reacts.
You know, he shouldn't have stood over him. You know, sometimes the detail of the hit and the nature of the hit, you look at the video and you coach off the video. Obviously, we don't want to be penalized. We want to play within the rules. We respect player safety. I can assess judgment on the fact that he stood over him, and that's not how we play. That's not reflective of the sportsman that he is, and I'm sure he's sorry for that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about his teammates,
sure.
Though.
I hope he gets better.
I feel like they're good with it.
Real quick, I want to mention a couple other things. The Titans win, of course, thanks to Marcus Mariota, late touchdown pass to Delonte Walker.
In a 10-10 game with 13 seconds to go in the third. The monster, Henry, is back there. Play fake, Mariota floats it down the middle. Walker at the 5. Walker in the end zone. Touchdown, Titans!
Titans win, and that means they are still atop the AFC South. They take on Arizona this weekend. By the way, it's a place and a team they've never played before.
Wow.
How weird is it that they've never been to Arizona?
He's kind of turning into the Mariano Rivera for this team. I mean, he is like the closer for the Titans the last 2 weeks.
Delonte Walker?
No, Derrick Henry.
Oh, Henry. Yeah,
he said Henry's name there before the snap.
Did you? So. I wasn't listening to that part.
Yeah.
Real quick, last thing. Eli Manning reacted to his head coach, Ben McAdoo, fired right after the show yesterday.
Not what I, you know, what I wanted. I got great respect for Coach McAdoo. We have a great relationship. I don't have bad feelings for him, and I wish him all the best. And the same with Jerry Reese. I think Jerry Reese, obviously, you know, a lot of credit goes to him. He's a big part, you know, that we held up two trophies. So I appreciate all he's done for me and the support he's given me. And so I wish nothing, you know, but the best for those two guys, and would help them if they needed anything from me.
Here's the best part about all of that.
They're going to start in this week.
Geno Smith started last week, breaking the streak. They've already said since Ben McAdoo got fired, yeah, Eli's starting this week.
What?
Streak restarted.
You made a franchise decision to put him on the bench to play the other guys.
Yep.
Is there some new potential playoff berth in sight all of a sudden?
Nope.
What?
I don't get it. I love how bad they are.
All right, let's get to a break. When we come back, we will get physical right here on Cube Show. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. As we do each and every Tuesday morning, we welcome in Barrett Salee to the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Barrett Salee. Covers college football for CBS. Good morning, Barrett. How you doing?
Good, Cole. Sorry about last week, but I'm doing great.
No, it's all good. What was the biggest difference the second time around for the Georgia Bulldogs, allowing them to do what they did to the Auburn Tigers in the SEC Championship game?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, Auburn really didn't have an answer on how to get to second and five consistently. That was what Kerryon Johnson's biggest asset was down the stretch for them, getting in second and third manageable. And to their credit, to Auburn's credit, in the first drive, I thought they did a fantastic job mixing it up. That's why they went down on whatever it was, 12 plays or whatever, and scored. But Georgia figured it out, and really – because of Johnson's injury and the fact that he wasn't, you know, able to be used the way that he normally was, there was no plan B. And that's not necessarily a knock against Auburn. I just think that it's more of a compliment to Georgia to say, all right, well, you know, we understood that you had options. Some of those options worked, and we took them away. And, you know, simply put, Auburn just sort of ran out of gas. And the better team won, and the better team was Georgia. The better team was Georgia all year long. The best team in the SEC all year long was Georgia, and they deserve that SEC title.
So you think Georgia's a better football team than Alabama today?
Without question. I mean, they're a more complete, they're the most complete football team in the college football playoff. They run the ball as more effectively than anybody. Their defense is as deep and athletic and versatile as anybody. Their passing game is able to be as dynamic as it needs to be, and it doesn't need to be that great, but it's certainly capable of doing what it needs to do. So, without question, you know, they're the most complete football team in the college football playoff.
Barrett Salee joining us, covers college football for CBS. What part of this Georgia team did maybe you change your opinion on the most coming out of the SEC championship game heading into the college football playoff?
Nothing. Quite honestly, nothing. I mean, I thought, and look, this is why I picked Georgia to win the SEC in August. I thought their offensive line issues were overstated. They are, and they proved that all year. I thought their lack of wide receivers was overstated. It was. They proved that all year. And I thought defensively they were going to be as solid as any team in the country, if not more solid than any team in the country. And they are. So really nothing surprised me. You know, in terms of coming out of that game, because that's the Georgia team that I picked. That's the, you know, granted it was Jacob Eason this summer when I picked them, not Jake Fromm, but the style of play and what they're able to do, they're the exact same football team that I thought they'd be this summer. So really, nothing changed. That team you saw on Saturday night is the team that I expected to win the SEC back in August.
It's early, but how do you feel they match up with Oklahoma?
I think they match up very well. I think when you have the idea of Davin Bellamy, Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, and that crew going up against Baker Mayfield, that's going to be hard for Baker Mayfield because, you know, and I think those linebackers can force him into freelance mode a lot. He gets a little reckless. And sometimes he makes great plays due to his recklessness. Sometimes he makes awful plays due to his recklessness. That's why they lost to, you know, Iowa State earlier this year. So I think they match up really well. I think they'll be able to control the ball. They'll be able to run right at Oklahoma. They'll be able to keep Baker on the sideline if they want to do that. And I think defensively they'll be able to have enough success against that offense to give them a chance to not only win, but win rather handily. I think Georgia's a significantly better football team than Oklahoma.
Barrett Salee joining us with CBS. He covers college football. Follow him on Twitter at Barrett Salee. He joins us every Tuesday morning. This time around, round three, Alabama-Clemson. How do you feel the Crimson Tide matches up against the Tigers this time around?
Of the three matchups, this is the toughest matchup for Alabama against Clemson. I think in previous years, Clemson had Deshaun Watson, but I think also Alabama was way better on both lines of scrimmage. And I think that's the biggest problem for Alabama is when games are won, you know, those games are won on the line of scrimmage. So when Alabama's got the ball, who do you trust more, Alabama's offensive line or Clemson's defensive line? I trust Clemson's defensive line way more. I don't think Alabama's offensive line is that good. I don't think they should be finalists for the Joe Moore Award. I think Clemson's defensive line will win that battle consistently in that game. On the flip side, who do you trust more, Clemson's offensive line or Alabama's defensive front? The answers I don't know, because you don't really know how healthy all of that crew is going to be in a month. Now, Nick Saban said that most of them are going to be healthy, and that's great. It still doesn't necessarily make it fact. So, to me, that's going to really tell the tale. And the fact that I think of the three times that Alabama's faced Clemson the last 3 years, this is the worst offensive line that Alabama's produced during that time span, and the most questionable defensive front. Now, by Alabama standards, not by regular standards, but by Alabama standards. But still, that's what makes me, you know, skeptical about it.
It's weird to say that, and I kind of agree with you. I don't think this is a great matchup for Alabama. A lot of it having to do with that Clemson front seven, especially the defensive line. But it just feels so strange to say with two elite targets like Mike Williams and Jordan Leggett gone, and the best player in school history gone at quarterback, that it could still be a bad matchup for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, but I think it is. And then you look at some of the other weapons they've got. I mean, ETN's a real weapon. So is Kelly Bryant. Kelly Bryant's more of a weapon on the ground than Deshaun Watson was. And I think, you know, you look back at history, and that certainly is something that's challenging for Alabama, especially if you've got some injury concerns in the front seven, which, again, we don't – you know, Nick Saban can say those players are going to play. We need to see them. So, I just think – from a matchup perspective, this is a more complete Clemson team, you know, top to bottom than either of the other two that Alabama's faced. And I still think, and look, and I've said this, and Alabama fans may hate me for it, I think there's a significant drop-off between the top three teams in the college football playoff and number four. Whether you think number four is Alabama, Ohio State, USC, Auburn, doesn't matter. I think this is a year where there's a top three, and then you've got a bunch of flaws for number four, whoever you think number four is.
Sounds like you feel like Georgia has the path to take home the college football playoff trophy.
Yes, I think Georgia beats Clemson. I think Georgia will. It's the most complete football team in the playoff this year. I think what they're going to get better with Jake Fromm over the next 15 practices, because I think people forget, you know, a lot like Jalen Hurts last year. You know, Jake Fromm's never taken first team snaps in a camp setting, and now he's got that. So they've been sort of doing it, flying by the seat of their pants throughout the course of the season. Now they get a chance to hit the reset button. So, I think it's going to be Georgia over Clemson.
When you look at some of the other bowl matchups, Auburn and Central Florida, can the Tigers get motivated enough to knock off the last remaining undefeated team in college football in the Peach Bowl?
I don't know. I mean, anytime you have that group of five New Year's Six game, you never know what you're going to get. And a lot of it does depend on Kerryon Johnson. And, you know, I think the one thing for Auburn, though, is the problem they've had in a lot of these games is when the running game doesn't click and they get an obvious passing situation, their offensive line lets them down. But it let them down against Georgia. It let them down against Clemson. It let them down against LSU. Central Florida does not pose that same kind of threat. So I think that's the one thing where you can say, okay, even if they're not up for the game, can they just simply out-athlete Central Florida? And the answer is probably yes, but not definitely yes. So, I'd love to see what Auburn does and maybe try in terms of taking the game away from Kerryon and say, hey, look, all right, we got to find some more identities. We got to figure out how to do what we want to do when plan A doesn't work, because quite frankly, that's why they lost the SEC championship game.
Great stuff, Barrett. Look forward to catching up next week.
All right, thanks, Cole.
Barrett Salee joins us every Tuesday morning. Carver's college football for CBS. You can follow him on Twitter at Barrett Salee.
Pick Georgia to win the SEC championship over Auburn, I saw.
That he did.
Big news.
He's also picking Georgia over Clemson for the national championship.
Hey, listen, if you're going to get crap for people being wrong, I'm okay if people take victory laps if you get it right. If NC State would have gotten in, I would have expected the same from you.